Begin.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Tracy Smith, and Judge John Smith. The Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, July 25th, 2023. We have three cases set for oral calendar that we are hearing via Zoom. Thank you all for joining us. Before we begin, I would like to make sure, I just want to make sure that everything is working fine for the attorneys. If you can please unmute and just state your name so we can make sure that we can hear you.
Kirby McLean. Thank you, Your Honor.
Perfect.
Jill Frieders.
Okay, excellent. We can see and hear both of you. Because we are holding this virtually via Zoom, as we all know, sometimes we do run into technology issues. If we do, we will make sure that we accommodate any issues that we come across at all. Otherwise, appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. When you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. I should also note that this is being recorded. No other recordings are allowed, but we will have this recording of this argument available within the next day or two that you can access if you would like. So with that, counsel for appellant, please state your name for the record, the party you are representing. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Kirby McLean, and it's my honor to represent Craig Rucker, the appellant in this matter. I'm just noticing the time isn't started yet, so I would like to make sure that I'm...
Yes, thank you. Marshall, there we go.
All right. May it please the court, opposing counsel. Mr. Rucker has appealed three primary issues in this matter. The first is limitations on when the parties can take vacation time, which in essence has expanded when only one party can take has holiday time. The second is whether the court needs to make detailed findings on the relevant best interest factors, including the change in developmental needs of the child. And the third issue is two-part regarding child support, which is whether a party's income changes after the initial filing, what period of time the district court should look at for income for the parties or whether it should continue. The other is also related to child support, which goes to whether or not bonus income that has been consistent should be included for purposes of child support. I'll take the issues one by one in that order, and I'm happy to take any questions as I go along. So the first is regarding the limitation of vacation time. In this case, the district court determined that the mother would get all of the winter break, with the exception of when the court ordered holiday time is, without providing any findings of why that is appropriate in this case. So as the brief describes, only one party has the ability to take, just keep regular parenting time over the child's winter break, which has limited Mr. Rucker's time with the child. So over Christmas, he only has one extra 24-hour period that he is allowed to take with the minor child. According to Selesky, the parties, according to Selesky, the court cannot limit holiday time without expressly providing a reason to do so. And
the court reference all the factors they should in?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor, you remuted yourself.
Okay, didn't the district court in its order reference all the factors that they should consider and whether they should In other words, it seems like the findings are adequate to me.
I don't believe that the court did reference all of the factors that they should have. What ultimately, when reading it, it looks like they looked at the argument of counsel without determining what the factual matter was. So the court did not take into account what her opinion was of the case. She determined what Ms. Frieders had argued and what I had argued, and then said it's not in the best interest, but without providing any additional information. And most importantly, and to the next item, was the change in developmental needs. This is a fundamentally different child than when the court initially made its findings. I believe the child was 5 or 6 when the initial judgment and decree was issued, and now he's a teenager. And the needs of a 5 or 6-year-old are just fundamentally different than what a teenager's needs are. And I don't believe the court took that into account in determining to not modify parenting time at all. And that includes, I want to make sure I'm addressing your questions, Your Honor.
Okay. I understand what your position is. Thank you.
And can I ask Ms. McLean, just about so I understand, I'm looking at your brief where you have on pages 6 to 7, for example, a chart that shows parenting time. As I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'll use holidays to mean the actual Christmas holidays instead, and then winter break to mean the winter break. As I understand, what the district court did is it decided that winter break is unavailable for either party to use for vacation, for their vacation time. And so I wonder if that's accurate. When I'm looking at your chart, which I think was, you know, representative, it shows, for example, there would be, you know, 3 days in a row, whatever year this was, 2022, father had the child December 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and again on January 5th, January 6th, January 7th. So it seems like there are, you know, periods of time within the winter break that, according to regular parenting time, father had. Is there some, but neither party can use their days, and mother had, you know, obviously the other days. Neither one can use their vacation time. Is that right? And what is the, explain to me the argument that father can't take any time with the child over winter break then?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, the regular parenting time does hold. So Mr. Rucker did have some time with Matthew, with the minor child, over the last 2022 winter break time. However, the original decree states that the parties cannot take vacation time with the minor children during school, and it provides when the parties can take that vacation time. And so by not allowing Mr. Rucker to take, or either party to take, parent or vacation time over winter break, that has reduced the amount of time that Mr. Rucker may take with the minor child, the longer stretches of time, that sort of thing. I do believe,
because otherwise, could Mr. Rucker have taken, let's say, look at 2022, could he have taken then his 3 days of parenting time, and then on top of it taken a week of vacation from that time? Is that the way it would have operated?
Yes, they are allowed to take vacation time from a Friday to a Friday. And it cannot overlap with the time that they are allowed for holiday time. So in this example on page 6 of the brief, Mr. Rucker would not have been able to take the December 25th because that is Christmas and therefore a holiday. And so he could only take from a Friday to a Friday.
So if he happened to have the child, if it was his year for Christmas, he would have 3 days of parenting time plus 2 days for the Christmas, the holiday proper. And then he would have 5 days in a row, but he couldn't add to that for two more days or whatever vacation. Is that right?
I believe so. Yes, Your Honor. Where they have very short holidays for this for I believe it's about 24 hours for December 24th and about 24 hours for December 25th. And the only holidays as defined to over winter break. But because the other party has so much more parenting time, she was essentially awarded all of winter break with the exception of the regular parenting time. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
I think so. I'm trying to figure out. I mean, there are breaks of time. Mom's not awarded all the break time.
No.
He's limited to his parenting time plus holidays. She's limited to her parenting time plus holidays, but she has more parenting time.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to the next issue, which I have partially discussed already, but whether or not the court needs to make detailed findings for the relevant best interest factors and whether or not the court took into account the change in developmental needs according to 518.175 subdivision 5B. In this case, the minor child's needs have changed substantially and that was not addressed in the court's order. He was 5 or 6 years old, so that would be a kindergartner when the original decree was issued, and now he is a teenager and his needs have changed. Specifically, the issue of whether or not there's a very short period of time that the minor child goes back into the care of his mother on Fridays, and that it's not appropriate for a 13-year-old. And to have to go back just for those few hours on the weekends in which my client has parenting time on the weekend. So he has parenting time every Thursday and then every other Friday, Saturday. And so therefore there's a short period of time between Friday or on Fridays that the minor child would have to go back into the care of his mother, which adds an additional back and forth between these two parties, which I don't believe is appropriate given his age and his developmental needs to have to wake a teenager up, move them over, everything that goes into that. It wasn't taken into account that his needs are just different and that is not appropriate anymore. And it was argued at the hearing, which you can see in the transcript. It was argued in Mr. Rucker's affidavit, which you can review as well and is identified in both of the briefs. And his needs are just, they're different now than they used to be. And that wasn't taken into account. And that's a principle of why a change in parenting time is allowed to be requested every 2 years, because kids change, their needs change. And that's something that the court needs to look at because they change all the time. I mean, moment to moment, but that's not part of what the court can take a look at, but they change, especially from a five-year-old from elementary school to middle school. Those are fundamentally different kids. And the court needs to take a look at what is best for him now and today.
Again, just so I can understand, Ms. McLean, it's on the days where there are not school and on those Fridays where dad has the weekend.
That's correct.
Daytime on Friday is this change back to mom. So he gets up, it goes to mom from 7 p.m. or a.m. until pickup time on Friday night. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then finally, the issue of child support. I don't have a ton of time left, so I just wanted to briefly touch on. This is a unique situation in which my client brought his initial motion in the summer of 2021, and the motion was heard in November of 2021. During that time, his income changed because of his mother's passing, and he inherited additional property that is income generating. And because of that change, his income increased, and therefore the date in which the modification occurred went back to when my client initially brought his motion, but his income was not as high as it was at the end of the year as it was when the initial motion was brought.
And so I don't see, if your argument is that the change in child support, even though we know it goes retroactive to the motion date, the filing mm-hmm. of the motion, should actually be established at the point that the income actually increases during the period of time? Or there are two arguments maybe you're making. You can't consider any increase until the court's order. Or if you do consider an increase, it should only be retroactive to the date of that increase. If it's the latter, I wonder what difference it makes and if you have shown us what the difference is. So if it meant 3 months of the child support where it's just, you know, a de minimis difference, if it had been, you know, 3 months at a lower income versus now, you know, I think on appeal, you have to show that it's actually a meaningful, not a de minimis difference.
In this case, it was larger. So the amount of income and the change to child support is not significant for one child for that amount. Yes, I agree. But the issue is the retroactivity was primarily related to one of the children graduating from high school and going on to college. So it was thousands and thousands of dollars that was overpaid in that period of time. But to address your question specifically, yes, it's a bit two part though, Your Honor, because the income changed after the initial motion, and then the court requested updated income after the hearing date. And so it took about a year between the two. I just don't think that's right for judicial economy, and I don't believe that it's right for we couldn't make the argument because the court ended up striking our final affidavit explaining what. So we didn't even have the opportunity to argue why his income had changed. We had provided all of the requested information throughout. And then it just was, what period of time are we looking at? And I think Mr. Rucker has that right to provide the income information of knowing what period of time the court is going to address. Thank you, Your Honors. I realize I'm running out of time, but.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and party you are representing. And please also be mindful of the clock as well. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jill Frieders on behalf of Kathleen Rucker. The district court's findings are sufficient to allow appellate review. And I think that's, you know, what level of detail is the district court required to make findings? There's over 19 pages of findings, and I think the findings are sufficient to allow appellate review. And the district court did consider the relevant best interest factors. The argument with respect to holidays, Christmas break, is, I think, a false argument. The parties...
Counsel, if I may, I just wanted to ask, when you talk about the best interest the findings in relation to the best interest factors, I'm not quite sure that they're actually tied to the best interest factors. So why is it sufficient? I mean, shouldn't there be? I mean, oftentimes we will see, okay, here's a listing of the relevant best interest factors, and I think the case law is clear that you don't have to go through each and every one, only the ones that are relevant. But that's not here in the district court's order. There's not a listing. So correct. Why is this even sufficient?
Well, I think you have to look at the evidence that Mr. Rucker provided the district court. And he didn't provide very much. That's my notes on that one. He did say that his son was older, but he didn't say why. That was a basis for modification. He made the conclusory statement that his son is older. Of course, his son is older, but he made no, he didn't provide any information about why being older would require a modification of parenting time. He indicated that a modification of parenting time would allow himself and his son more time together. Well, of course, that would allow more time together, but he provided no information about why that would be in the child's best interests.
On that, though, when we look at, I mean, I'm looking at the district court's order concerning that because it seems a little bit to drop it to on the Fridays to get up, drop a child off for a daytime and then return later that afternoon for a 13-year-old. You know, I think the argument is it's, I mean, you know, of course that they're, I mean, it, and especially if transitions are meant to be minimized, which, I mean, the district court goes through the arguments in details. And then at finding 35 says the modification does not serve the best interest of the child. But besides laying out the arguments, which lay out the arguments of the parties, I'm not exactly sure what the reasons are for the district court deciding that it's not shown that just let's reduce transitions, that there's not a basis to change to the parenting time. Of course, it doesn't need to be endangerment, as we know, yeah. You know, so but, what but are the best interest analysis?
Too, yeah. But I'd like to point out too, that that exact argument was made on the first appeal and the Court of Appeals affirmed the parenting time schedule.
Like 7 years ago.
Correct.
And this is a modification of parenting time motion, though, obviously.
Correct. So. But even Mr. Rucker doesn't set forth how it's in the child's best interests. And I think most of those transitions occur at school. They're not, I mean, dad drops off, kid go at school, or the child.
But isn't
goes to
that
school.
What this change was about? Is that these are non-school days where it introduces a transition from morning till later in the afternoon that could be obviated entirely if the child just stayed with dad through the weekend from Thursday through Sunday, right? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? Is the daytime on Friday?
That's, I think so.
Okay.
Part of it, yes. And also, you know, there's mother's evidence that dad doesn't provide the child's medication, doesn't take the child to his activities. So there's information from mother as to why it's not in the child's best interest to have additional time. There's also the argument about at Christmas that the court's required to have detailed findings for modification of a holiday schedule. There was no modification of the holiday schedule, first. Secondly, the Saluski v. Rupi case deals with a very different situation where the court gave all of the holidays to one parent, and that was reversed and remanded for further findings and to... but this case isn't anything like the Saluski Rupi case. And I don't, I mean, whether or not it's in the child's best interest to have, to go home on Fridays or not on Fridays is, you know, I don't think that's a basis for reversal of this matter. This is a case where the court father provided very little information as to why a modification was in the child's best interests. And most of his statements are conclusory without any evidentiary support behind them. So the court didn't have much to go on to make findings. And the court, for the court to make a finding that it is in this child's best interests to change the Friday schedule, well, there was not much evidentiary support that provided by dad to even make such findings. So I'm just not sure that the court could have made more detailed findings on that issue.
Can I ask about the break time? I mean, as I'm understanding how it works, then neither parent will take the break time for vacation. But the child is off school, and so mom has more parenting time. So I guess has more time on those days. But it's the parenting schedule, and dad has his parenting time when the child is off school. Mm-hmm. And then, so the time, I guess the argument is it reduces the time available. So mom can take vacation time, I suppose, out of either person's parenting time schedule in the summer or at other times and vice versa. Is that right? Can they take their vacation over their parent, the other's parenting time? How does that work?
They're not supposed to take it over each other's weekends. It's from a Friday to a Friday. And I don't think they're supposed to take other people, the other parent's time. But I can't say that for sure.
Okay, because that's just, yeah, sort of confusing to me because I mean, obviously, if neither of them has a full week of time, they have to intrude on parenting time, right? Take their vacation time. And so, you know, I suppose the argument, as I'm seeing it, is this is a good time for the child to take vacation because he's off school. And it's limiting my other opportunities to spring break or summer or perhaps MEA weekend or something like that. I mean, is that what it's sort of the argument is about?
Well, I think that's part of the argument, you know, but you also need to keep in mind, my client has not been able to take, I mean, my client theoretically under the old system would have had the right to take the children every other year over Christmas break.
What does that mean, the right to take them over Christmas break?
She could have used that for her vacation time.
Right. Either of them could have used their vacation time.
Every other year. Yeah. She would have had the right to be the first one to take that. The one year she tried to do it, Mr. Rucker created such a fuss and put the children in in the middle of it and created such havoc that my client chose not to do that anymore because put the kids in the middle. And this has been a very high conflict case over the years. And so my client chose not to do it, but that means that she's not been able to involve the children in her family's activities, her extended family's activities, those kinds of things. The court, I think to resolve this issue, the court just said, let's take the vacation out of it. We'll just leave it based on the holiday schedule and their basic, their normal schedule. And that takes it out of this fight over who gets the kids for Christmas break. And I think the court thought it was the fairest way to deal with it. So, I mean, that's why the court did it this way. My client proposed that they split Christmas break. And that was in her motion, but I don't believe Mr. Rucker wanted to do that. So it's been very high conflict and difficult for these folks. The child support argument is, the argument that was made today is a little different than what I think is in the brief. Mr. Rucker's brief seems to argue that new sources of income that are incurred after the filing of the motion should not be counted for the purposes of calculating child support. And that's what I understand his argument to be in the brief. And I don't think that is case law. I don't think that's a statute. It's income from all sources. And he clearly has additional income from farming. And the retroactive award of child support, I don't believe, was briefed. And if it was, even if it was, I think the difference would have been de minimis. He did overpay child support for a period of time. Child support got reduced retroactively, and he got a credit for that. So he's been reimbursed for that. But this argument that his child support was mistakenly high because he has a new source of income, I don't think is brief, nor do I think that his position is consistent with the law. And then with respect to my client's bonus income, the court made findings that her bonus income is not something she can count on. It's not regular or dependable. And I think the district court did not abuse its discretion by excluding that from the calculation of child support.
Counsel, on that last issue of whether it's regular or dependable, we have two bonuses for the past 2 years.
Correct.
How often does it need to be? How consistent does it need to be? How many years do we need to have before it's considered dependable?
I would think more than 2 years. I think 5 years would be I think if there were 5 years, I think that would be for sure something that the court should consider. But 2 years, I don't think shows a consistent pattern.
What about 3 years in a row? Would that be enough?
I think it would depend upon how long someone has worked there, what the history of bonuses have been, if they've periodically had bonuses over the years, off and on. I think all of that has to be taken into consideration.
What case law do you rely on for that proposition that 2 years is not enough, two consecutive years is not enough?
I don't think that there is case law that says that. The case law that I rely on is the case law that I cited that talks about it has to be regular and dependable. Now, some people get bonuses based on their, you know, it's been every year, it's based on their productivity or those kinds of things. So every case is different. And I think the district court has to have an opportunity to review the case, the case and the specifics of the case to make that determination.
And just so factually, so mom worked at the same place, all right, the bonus years in, that are considered are 2021 and 2020, it looks like, right? Mm-hmm. 2020, 2021. Did mom work at the same place in 1918? Do we 19- know? I mean, in 2019, 2018, sorry.
Yeah. She has worked at the same place since the trial of the original trial.
Okay. So there was apparently we don't have who's ever, you know, the, we don't have the bonus. What we're looking at two bonus years, 2020, 2021 right. only, even though she worked there previously. And then, although the order came out in 20, I guess we didn't know the order came out in 22, but 2022, we don't have that information.
Correct.
Oh, not part of the decision. Okay, thank you.
I have 42 seconds left. So if you have any questions, I will try to answer them, but otherwise I am done. You are muted.
I know, I'm trying to get it. Thank you. There's theoretically, if there was an income change that made a difference mm-hmm. during a time period of a motion, it would be odd, would it not, to retroactively go back to the filing of the motion if it made a significant difference there?
I would agree.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. It looks like there aren't any other questions. We appreciate it. We will now turn back to appellant's attorney. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and as soon as we get it ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. To go through the issues one more time and address the issues that Ms. Frieders brought up, there were two lengthy affidavits about why this change would be in the best interest of the child. It included information about what the exchanges were like, what activities were like, and it included all of that information that could have been used in detailed findings for why this is an appropriate change and why it should have been an appropriate change. It was also argued at the hearing back in November of 2022 of why so many things have changed in this young child's life and why he's not the same person that he was when he was 5 and 6, and now that he was 13, I believe, at the time of the hearing.
Counsel, I wanted to follow up on that issue because it seems that your argument really focuses on, in the brief, focuses on the idea that, and I'm looking at specifically page 20 of your brief, where it says 13-year-olds benefit from more substantial chunks of time and fewer interruptions with each parent. That seems conclusory. First of all, it's just talking about 13-year-olds in general. It's not talking about this particular child, and it doesn't explain why more substantial chunks of time are better for this particular child. I'm curious as to where are the details, where are the specifics as to why that matters in this particular case.
So it's a bit two-part. So there's guidance from the court about what parenting time and exchanges are best for children and how their needs change. The I believe it's the Minnesota Judicial Guide to Child-Focused Parenting Time, and that's what that is from. The details are in the affidavits and were argued at the hearing about why this child in particular, where both sides say there have been moments of high conflict, why are we causing additional back and forth between these two parents when it doesn't need to happen, and the child has already... We're not talking about attachment theory anymore. We're talking about a kid who is 13 plus years old now. Why does he need to have these additional touch points every other Friday with both parents, specifically during the summer? So I agree, Your Honor, that there could be more details in the brief, but it's based in that for the argument. Is there another question? Okay, to address the vacation schedule issue, the problem is during the summer, Mr. Rucker is only allowed to take parenting time over his extra week of vacation time, of parenting time. So during the summer in June, July, and August, he's allowed one extra week of time in which he can take parenting time. He can only take his vacation time over that week. So by removing the time to take additional parenting time over vacation time over the holiday break for Christmas break, winter break, it removes time from that he's otherwise not able to take, because he automatically will get those single weeks. And additionally, as is in the court's order, the other party has tried to take her vacation time directly over my client's additional 1 week of parenting time as well. So his time has been reduced, and the court has refused to limit when the mother is allowed to take vacation time, but has limited in every which way when Mr. Rucker can take vacation time.
So he cannot take 2 weeks of vacation?
He's able to take 2 weeks of vacation only during the summer, only over his extra week of parenting time. So he doesn't get extra.
So 1 week, so he gets a week, he uses vacation for, I'm trying to figure out what amount of days you're talking about, a reduction of time over the year, it sounds like, is what you're talking about.
It's about a week of time, Your Honor. And when his time is already so limited, that week means the world to my client.
He'll have 1 week less of time with the child?
Based on this change, yes.
He can't take vacation time during spring break or during other times during the summer?
Your Honor, you are
non-consecutive.
He could take it over spring break. Thank you, Your Honors. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you both for your oral arguments and your briefing. We appreciate it. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time on this case. Thank you both.